This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.
Rewind to Dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear are opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
I'm just getting warmed up. That was a loaded news pack. 35 minutes of news discussion that if you're not an XL member, you're missing out on, because we covered everything from Tony Khan's media call, Charlotte Flair's great essay on the Players Tribune. We talked about what's coming up this weekend. We spoke about the Great American Bash and Keiji Muto debuting in NXT, getting to keep his own name. An unexpected message we got from Ben Askren on Wednesday evening. But the big news, Christian Horner out at Red Bull. And we had the best dissection anywhere.
Biggest story of the day. Biggest wrestling story of the day, I would even say. No, I mean, honestly, the best part of the show is the first 35 minutes, okay? So I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed the conversation, especially in talking about that Charlotte Flair essay on the Players Tribune. So hope you guys in the Post-Wrestling Cafe enjoyed it as well.
We hope you enjoyed Pollock and Thurston earlier today. We got to welcome Trish Spears from the Trish and Sarah Wrestling Podcast onto the show. And just going to play a short clip here of Trish talking about the weekend coming up, as AEW will be running All In, and the choice by WWE to run Saturday night's main event against it, and also how Evolution has been affected by all of these shows that they're promoting this weekend. So again, this is from Pollock and Thurston earlier today.
And when you look at the Saturday night main event lineup, you know, this is in a venue that last time in October, they did just close to 15,000 for. Mm-hmm. There is no Cody. There is no Roman. There is no CM Punk. You know, they could have run Cena, CM Punk back if they really wanted to go after it. But I think once AEW moved to the afternoon, it cut them off a little bit because they can't move with it being NBC. And then the Evolution thing, I think that this is probably the biggest disappointment, because you are using an all-woman show that should be an opportunity to celebrate your female performers in your company and to show how far the company has come as some sort of pawn in this kind of counter-programming war. And consequently, you know, being the last show of a free show weekend on a less favorable day against major local competition, which competes for, you know, parking and accommodation, with the MLB Futures game that day, going into Home Run Derby on the Monday and the All-Star game, and then Beyonce just around the corner, you've put them really, really up against it. And furthermore, you've made it so they're not the focus of the weekend. The focus from the WWE point of view for this weekend is Goldberg's retirement. And I just think that that's not a great message to send. And I think it really has kind of so far backfired quite considerably.
That was Trish Spears on Pollock and Thurston earlier today, as we go into the weekend of many shows, and some that are going to be successful and others that may not. In the side of Evolution, I will state this. I think that it has been a show that has been diminished by being just somewhat lost in the shuffle. Nikki Bella, though, they got out there, like, she was on the Today Show promoting this. They had her do like all this media in New York, which, you know, at least like, we will see what the final tally is for Evolution on Sunday night, which, as we speak on Wednesday night, that Sunday show feels like it's 3 years away in comparison to what we have to watch beforehand. So Evolution feels off in the distance, but that will cap off the weekend, and we will have coverage here at Post Wrestling. We are going to be going live Saturday right after All In, and will go live Sunday here on the YouTube channel right after Evolution, which we will also include our review of Saturday night's main event for Sunday. So all the WWE shows will be recapped Sunday. So be sure to check in at postwrestling.com. Hit subscribe here on the YouTube channel. And for Cafe members, dropping on Thursday, it's Vengeance 2005. I'm looking forward to chatting about this show with you, Wei. I didn't know what we were getting into with this show. There will be no shortage of great recollections of 20 years ago. Back both when Red Bull was just getting its start, Vengeance 2005 was
insane. To think that Christian Horner was there when Lita was still married to Kane and was just about to begin her storyline with Edge and Matt Hardy. That's wild. Wow. I'm just on that storyline alone. I think we could spend an hour.
Yes. Well, not the only marriage, or at least marriage proposal, that we'll be talking about, as it relates to Vengeance 2005. So that's dropping Rewind Away Thursday at postwrestlingcafe.com. Tonight, we are off to Garland, Texas, the Curtis Caldwell Center, their first of two nights at the venue as they come back Thursday night with Collision. WrestleTick's final number was just over 2,500 for the show. I wouldn't call this like a great number by any stretch for the Curtis Caldwell Center. For comparison, TNA like drew over 4,000 to this venue for its Genesis pay-per-view at the beginning of the year. Garland is about like 40 miles or so outside of like Arlington, where the other shows are all taking place. And I would just guess that of those that are either traveling or are going to the shows this weekend, they're viewing Saturday as the big show, and if they're going to catch any other AEW, maybe it's going to be Supercard or something that's right in Arlington as opposed to going out to Garland on a Wednesday night.
Yeah, I mean, the distance in time between a Wednesday and a Saturday, or even a Friday if you're choosing to do ROH, is quite significant. So that, plus I do think like Dynamite itself might have a bit of a... There's still a bit of a perception problem, I would say, where it doesn't necessarily feel maybe as urgent or as like must-see. Even though I think the quality of the shows have really taken a step up, that hasn't really sort of translated into at least, you know, live attendance yet.
Last week they did top 5,000, and that was a very good number for them last week. But generally, we haven't seen like a surge in like their weekly, like the weekly television, the tickets have not reflected, I guess, what overall the attitude toward the shows seem to have been, but sometimes that does lag. But yeah, that is what we have. For the third year in a row, we are getting Machine Head as the theme for All In, which was playing, it was the bumper music going over the match card.
Yeah, I feel like that made a lot more sense, like when this was like an England-based show. Texas?
Doesn't Gavin have Texas ties? No?
He lives in California, I'm pretty sure. I saw him at like a street festival there. I mean, whatever. I mean, it's a cool song. Yeah, great.
Yeah. Do you know who's playing here in Toronto all week?
Coldplay
is playing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's why they weren't running Rogers Stadium.
Yeah.
For All Day.
I have a funny story I'll tell you later, but one of my neighbors ended up hanging out with Chris Martin all day.
Really?
Yeah.
What does your neighbor do? Can you reveal?
Something in entertainment.
Interesting.
Yes.
So you're gonna reveal that off air.
Yeah. Is that annoying to do?
I mean,
I don't know. It wasn't me.
You're 1 degree of separation removed from Chris Martin of Coldplay. Wow.
I would be more degrees of separation than that, but yeah,
two, I guess.
It sounds like Chris Martin was not too happy with the setup of Rogers Stadium. A lot of complaints about this. This new
man, Davey on Up Next talked about like. Listen to Up Next, everybody, especially the first half hour or so. But
he didn't go to Coldplay, did he?
No, but he works near Rogers Center, obviously, and he spoke of like mass confusion from like seeing people around Rogers Center thinking that
they went to the wrong place.
Well, who could blame them? You know, like one's called Rogers Center, one's called Rogers Stadium. If you're not from the city,
I guess.
Well, how stupid? Okay.
Yeah, I guess.
How fucking stupid? Like, is Rogers? I mean, it's their infinite greed, you know, to want to like buy everything and just title it boringly like Rogers Blank.
Yeah.
These poor people had to like whatever, like travel an hour you know, late for their very expensive show that they went to see. Anyway, I have zero interest in going to that Rogers Stadium.
No. What, even if it was like Oasis or something?
No, I don't. I'm
going there to a concert in August. I don't know what I'm getting myself into.
I hope they improve it by then. And make sure you go to the right stadium, okay?
Yeah, I'm gonna go to Rogers Arena in Vancouver, and I'll be front row. Yes, you know, I started watching for all the talk about like these expensive tickets, ticket sales, dude. It's so easy to watch these Oasis concerts on, like, they're just full on like heavy produced like concerts on YouTube, like from their Cardiff show. You can watch this like no problem.
They just live stream them.
I think it's people just like. I don't know. The stream I watched, it looked like it was tremendous. And it was like right on YouTube.
Are these legal streams or no?
I don't know. It's on YouTube, so I assume it's legal. I watched it, so kill me.
Okay. Yep. Thank you. Saved me $700. Appreciate it.
Joke's on you. Mercedes Moné starts the show, and she wants to have a civil discussion with Toni Storm. Toni Storm is on the screen and says that only two things come from Texas. I'm at least one of them. So yes, this is the part where I've got to do all the Toni Storm lines, and Wei just gets to laugh at me. Moné calls her a mark and challenges her to come out from behind the screen. So she arrives. She is here in the flesh, and Moné proposes a toast with the champagne to herself. And Storm tells her to save your performative bullshit for your entrance on Saturday. Storm says, "You speak in catchphrases and have the authenticity of a spray tan in a rainstorm with the emotional depth of a kiddie pool. And you're a pussy-faced fraud." That'll be Brandon's isolated audio.
What the?
And she says, "I found myself with this belt. You have your belts as masks to hide behind. So, Mercedes, what are you so afraid of?" And Moné says, "I will always be better. I'm not afraid of anything. I went to hell and back and made the devil my bitch, and no one will stop the money train, nor Toni's logic about her using a lot of catchphrases. And the women's title is her destiny and her legacy. I'm a one-woman revolution. I'm the alpha and the omega and everything in between." Mm-hmm. I sent someone that was just like writing down everything that came to mind. She was going to get everything out in this final promo. Storm explains, "Dude, we got like you know, philosophical here." Toni says, "Legacies don't exist. We will all die and be forgotten. Moné fears an ordinary life. I only fear an ordinary death." And says, "You deserve all the titles, Mercedes, but not this one." And says, "You will always go down as the woman who couldn't win the big one." And Mercedes, all she's got to do is land this one. And she says, "Toni, this Sunday, I mean Saturday, may the best woman win." And this audience just pounced on Mercedes. "How dare you get the day wrong?" And they're chanting, "You fucked up." And they go to toast, and it ends with Toni tells her to eat shit, bitch, and goes for a moneymaker, which Mercedes escapes. And that was our final interaction, presumably, before Saturday. I thought this segment was great. I thought Toni especially had some great lines. And Mercedes was very good, too. I liked all of this, whether the match is happening Saturday or Sunday.
Make sure you go to the right stadium.
And yeah, make sure you check that ticket. Don't show up at the Rogers Stadium on Sunday if it says Saturday.
Yeah, I overall quite enjoyed the segment as well. It felt like a go home segment for a big match. And to start the show off with it, just I think further bolstered just like how we're supposed to feel about this match being one of the co-headliners of the show. In a talking segment like this, I think it's quite obvious that it's requiring a Toni Storm to carry it. She has carried most of this build because of her great ability to talk and to just be entertaining in these sort of scenarios. I do think, you know, it is worth mentioning like some level of just difference in abilities here that we got to clearly see in a segment like this, where both of them clearly are coming in with like script, right? You know, like they're both scripted and this is just like not a normal conversation. But Moné,
what if the credits came up producers Jen Pepperman, RJ City? like they end WWE with.
Every segment should have
every segment has credit. Like a credit roll.
Okay, well that's fine. But Monet's delivery, unfortunately, like makes it sound like a script. Whereas Storm, aside from her scripting being, I think, a lot more interesting and dynamic and creative, she's able to deliver it to make it actually sound like her thoughts, which, as twisted as the words may be, somehow they sound genuine coming out of like this character. But all that said, I think, you know, we've said enough probably about Mercedes' like abilities on the microphone. I think in this segment, she performed to the best of her abilities. And obviously what she brings to the table is her immense star power, which makes this match and makes Toni Storm's match on this card feel like it's one of the biggest wrestling matches of the entire year. And again, in ring is where we look forward to her performances the most. I think given the creativity we've seen from both her in her in-ring matches and also from the storytelling in Toni Storm's matches, I'm really looking forward to seeing the results of this one on Saturday/Sunday.
Imagine if the My Way video had a clip of The Rock with his go-home line being "eat shit, bitch" at the end of it.
It'd be way better. Wow. Yes.
Stay tuned for XL listeners, because we will be doing a preview of All in Texas. So that will be on the XL edition at the end of the show. John Moxley.
An All in preview and Christian Horner exiting Red Bull discussion.
Way, we are over delivering. We are banking on pumping up a lot.
There will always be a lot of gas in this car.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Always,
gotcha.
Always. Okay.
All gas, no brakes.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Granger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1-pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility, to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
It's G1 Climax season, and that means the Post Wrestling Cafe has you covered with podcasts covering every single tournament match. Plus, we've got Rewind Away going back to 2005 to review Vengeance, featuring Triple H versus Batista in a Hell in a Cell match. John and Way are going to be reviewing F1 the Movie, starring Brad Pitt. And of course, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Ad-free with the news of the week and your feedback. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com.
John Moxley promo, he brought up the Texas death match that him and Hangman had back in March of 2023. So they're not running from this. They're not doing the Hogan-Andre deal at WrestleMania 3 where they had never faced before. But he says, that was one battle and it was a long time ago. I've been beaten before, but I've never lost a war of attrition, which is what this is. And says, will you, Hangman, hold the line under all this pressure? I think you're pathetic and you have one chance to prove me wrong. And this time, you are all the way in.
Mm-hmm. I really think Mox has been doing great work that unfortunately will go completely unappreciated at this point, because I think we're so like tired of the Death Riders. But he's been cutting great promos as like lead villain. And it's almost like he's so good that we just kind of expect this level from him, and we almost take it for granted, I feel. At the same time, man, like these are the sort of promos where like you just he's stacking the odds so much and he's challenging the babyface so much that there's no other outcome that we can really see. No, in no world is like a villain going to say, are you going to live up to the challenge? And on the biggest show, no, they don't live up to the challenge. No, of course. But that doesn't mean that he shouldn't be talking like this.
First match of the show is Bandido and Brody King against Proto Shida, Konosuke Takeshita, and Kyle Fletcher. What do you think about Proto Shida?
I'm just grateful that a team actually has a tag team name, because we still have a faction on Raw that doesn't have anything at all.
Early on, there's a series of Tope Suicidas, culminating with one by Brody, which his audience went wild for. Bandido was fantastic in this match. Mm-hmm. He did this tilt-a-whirl and came down, spiking Kyle with a DDT. This audience went nuts for that. In comes Brody. He's caught with a Michinoku driver by Kyle Fletcher. And then it's Bandido with a series of counters using Ranas. First on a pop-up powerbomb by Takeshita. Later, it's a powerbomb off the turnbuckle by Takeshita. And it's Bandido doing like the race spot with Eddie, where he turns it into this beautiful snap Rana that looked tremendous. So then Brody chokes Kyle on the apron as Bandido hits a frog splash, but then lets go of Kyle, who lands on top, making the save. King misses a running cross body, running into the rail, and then it's Takeshita stopping a 21-plex, nailing him with the forearm, and then as Bandido uses a Greco-Roman lock, goes to the top, moonsault to the floor, and then he comes off the top with a tornillo into Takeshita's elbow and is hit with Raging Fire in 12 minutes and 14 seconds. This was the go-home segment for Supercard of Honor, and I was so looking forward to Bandido and Takeshita at the end of this. I thought this was the best match on the show. I thought this tag match was just excellent.
Yeah, honestly, I think one of the strengths of AEW is, like, for all you want to say about maybe, like, how much promotional power they're putting behind some of these guys, and, like, for a Supercard of Honor that, like, I don't know how much story, like, is even going into it. It almost doesn't matter, because on paper, they can make such great matches without, like, having any sort of backstory attached. And Bandido versus Takeshita is one of them. Great tag team match here. I mean, it's pretty amazing to me how, like, Brody King continues to receive such great reactions without that much, in my opinion, like, supplementary material that's attached to him. You know, I think he's achieving this purely through his in-ring performances, and somebody should be able to do that. But I think to really feel like a star, you're going to need a little bit more effort from, like, just storytelling elements and personality pieces, and just the ability to, like, hear him speak and tell us, you know, what's motivating him. And I think that's been lacking. I'd like to see that change.
Yeah. But it was an excellent match, to kick things off. The Outrunners reacted to their match with FTR, which was another great match on Collision Saturday night. And this was, unique in the sense that, like, it was not the Outrunners doing shtick or anything. It was them saying, like, we can be serious. We took FTR to the limit, and this is not over yet. And Renee then speaks with FTR, Stokely, and the Patriarchy, because those four will be teaming up on Collision against the Outrunners and Jetspeed. And so we've got an alliance with Christian with FTR, which is interesting if that is sort of the, you've now established some alliance where, you know, mm-hmm. Copeland's return, you can get from FTR to Christian mm-hmm. down the road as well. So this probably has a long-term play attached to it. But basically, they make a deal. You scratch our back, we'll scratch yours. And the indication was that if Cage and Nick Wayne win the tag titles, they would give a shot to FTR. And Stokely's outraged that FTR are not in the tag title match coming up on Saturday. And by the end of tonight's show, FTR is not in a match yet for All in Texas. So we will see if they are thrown into something on Collision. But as of now, they are not in a match.
Yeah, at 9 matches, I mean, which is, I believe, what, like, on the main card last year we had at All In was, I wonder if there's still room for him. And if there is, I would have expected an announcement on the Dynamite heading into the show. Because otherwise, you're just kind of putting FTR in a match for the sake of doing it at that point, right? But we could expect maybe potentially a buy-in at the very least. Otherwise, it wouldn't make so much sense for them to be in the Gauntlet.
Not really.
No. So, or, like, maybe they'll also, I mean, this is obviously setting up them playing a role in the tag team match itself.
They could do something in there. They're at least now attached with the Patriarchy. So,
and if that's happening, should we expect Cope to show up?
I think so. I think that's very possible. Like if FTR were just to get involved during the tag match, and then yeah, it's Copeland coming out to stop them. That's a big pop. He could have some just like he looks at Christian or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's definitely a role for them on the show that doesn't have to be just a match. Ricochet against Blake Christian. Christian cut a inset promo. Lee Johnson's been taken out, and he called the Gates of Agony Ricochet's little weenie dogs. I would have said, this was a tape promo, I would have said, cut, take that from the top. Don't want to hear that word ever again. They mentioned that Ricochet debuted in the Casino Gauntlet last year, and Taz feels that Ricochet has been the victim of bald profiling by all of these audience. There's a Fosbury through the ropes by Blake Christian when the Gates of Agony walk down, so Ricochet capitalizes, and he's just talking smack to Christian. Christian would manage a springboard 450. Ricochet kicks out, and then he gets distracted by the Gates of Agony, fights them off, and then walks from the guardrail across the two men's backs onto the apron, and then they yank him off. Ricochet hits a dive, the spirit gun, and vertigo. Blake Christian, great singles run in ROH. I'm sure he'll pick up a win on Friday. But still going after that singles win in AEW.
Well, he like we mentioned, he's got two simultaneous streaks, a winning streak in ROH and a complete losing streak in AEW television. I mean, maybe
that
maybe
I don't know if that's ever been done before in pro wrestling. Like that is a first.
Yeah, that is. Yeah. Anyway, he looked really good here. You know, like he's sort of the commander of the present day, where like you can count on him to deliver great performances, but you know he's always going to lose. But at least he got a bit of a promo here. So I would say, I don't know how effective he necessarily was at drawing sympathy from the crowd, because I feel like we've only ever seen him as a heel, at least on Dynamite.
Look at this image. Does this image not scream sympathy from fans?
Yeah, I don't think so. He's got a really hateable face, I have to say. Yeah, Blake Christian.
Looks like James Woods in like Casino.
Okay.
Well, the Gates of Agony attack Blake Christian. The three all pose together. There was no official announcement, but kind of just took it as these are Ricochet's guys now.
Yeah, I think that was pretty obvious from last week and even Saturday, you know.
Are they going to lose their hair?
No.
No?
I would say no.
Renee spoke with the Hurt Syndicate, and the Hurt Syndicate have to leave to go for a photo shoot with the tag belts. And they walk into the next room, and there is a whiteboard with a message on it from Jetspeed where it says that since Kevin Knight beat Shelton on Collision, they have taken the belts early. And MVP quotes West Side Gunn stating someone is about to die. And so now the Hurt Syndicate have to go reclaim their physical belts, leaving MJF on his own for the talkie talk.
Okay. That's why they did.
This is probably the worst thing on Dynamite. When I saw this whiteboard, it's like, man, can Jetspeed be any less over at this point? Thankfully, they had a better idea for Jetspeed later in the show. But this was pretty
so
silly.
So in watching Collision and watching that match, I think I questioned why Kevin Knight was the one to pin Shelton in the match.
Got your
rather
answer.
Than. Yeah, rather than Nick Wayne.
Who
I think at that point still they kind of needed some justification to be entered into the match. Okay, fine. Like they've beaten them up so much that you want to give Knight the win, sure. And then was it also to justify this particular moment where Jetspeed could say, hey, I pinned you, Shelton, therefore I'm taking the belt early, just to get the rest of the Hurt Syndicate out of the talkie talk segment? Did they do all of that just to get the Hurt Syndicate out of this talking segment? Because if so, it would have been, it's like, it's so incredibly like convoluted and unnecessary.
How do we get the Hurt Syndicate to sell for Jetspeed? Well, what if we attack them with the belts? Well, they can't just take our belts. They'd have to like steal them. We wouldn't just leave our titles for them to grab at ringside. Maybe this was a whole backstory.
Yeah, I don't think it does anything for Jetspeed. Anyway, but they I feel like they've clearly maybe listened to some sort of some of the complaints out there about the Hurt Syndicate being too dominant, because this episode was kind of all about maybe Hurt Syndicate being less dominant.
They aired a video for Okada and Omega that seemed to be a preview from the Countdown special that will be airing. Omega was happy to leave the book closed between the two, but then Okada came to AEW. We're different men today. They featured Don Callis and his involvement going back years with Omega and now at Okada's side. And Omega, and we got, of course, the replay of Omega's insides exploding. Omega will do anything to win this match. And Okada responds, maybe I'll kill you. Which we also got back-to-back segments between MVP and Okada threatening to kill their opposition.
Are you surprised we didn't see them in the flesh on this episode?
Well, we got to see Kenny's flesh, you know, coming up through his esophagus. Maybe a little bit. I guess it's possible that they could have some final angle on Thursday.
Yeah.
Honestly, I kind of took like the thing with Ibushi last week was kind of like their, I don't know what more you can do after that last week, but maybe we get something on Thursday.
Yeah, like I think the grandeur for this match like is very much told just by the matchup itself on paper and not even so much like what you do around the ring. And the video package was maybe more effective than anything they could have done in person.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Mark Briscoe and MJF come out. This pickle chant is over. They're all chanting Tiny Pickle. There's signs for it. Wasn't wearing the t-shirt, though, this week. I guess not necessary, but they are selling that thing.
And MJF actually sells pickles. Like, he's got a brand of pickles.
Yeah. Like, I think that was the tie-in. Yeah, maybe he's, MJF's Tiny Pickles. Maybe that'll be, like, a brand that he puts out. MJF is just, he's going so hard at Mark Briscoe and the Texas fans. He's doing a Southern accent. He's calling him a redneck, a hick, and tells Briscoe to go back home to his meth lab in Dumpster Fire, Delaware, and feed your 95 inbred children, you poor. And he said that Briscoe said, I'm going to beat your ass on Saturday when the bell rings. I'm not fazed by any of your words because I'm proud to be a redneck and work hard. See, MJF, you're a rich guy, but I have my own riches, my family. You're rich, but you're morally bankrupt and you have no soul. I love when Mark Briscoe gets analytical and he says, I can see right through you. And I know what you're going to do. You're going to say something about my brother to try and get into my head and get under my skin. So come on, just come out and say it. And MJF says, I would never say anything bad about Jay Briscoe. He was one of the best wrestlers ever, one of the best human beings to ever step inside the ring. However, I pity your brother who now has to look down and see what you've become, Mark, watching one of the best tag teams in the world, and now you've become a joke. And if Jay was here, and he walks right up and is speaking right into Mark's face, if he was here, what he would tell you is, chicken, it shouldn't have been me in that accident. It should have been you. And the whole crowd just cringes. And Mark attacks MJF, and right as he's about to hit the J-Driller, the Hurt Syndicate come out, and they get jumped by Jet Speed with the stolen tag belts as MJF runs through the crowd with Mark going after him. So let's put a pause on the segment to get your thoughts of the first half here before we get into our next program.
I think I really enjoyed my first talkie talk. This was really great. I continue to be surprised at the level of depth that we're getting from like the Mark Briscoe character. Like, he's not somebody who just, you know, like is what you would expect from appearances. He's not even just a guy who like you can rely upon to like deliver a very charismatic moment. He's somebody who puts a lot of thought into like countering the words of a bully here. You know, he had some really great words here. He essentially said, MJF, you are rich in possessions, but I'm rich in family and friends, things that actually matter. And I think that's just a great reminder for all of us in life about what to actually focus on. I also think getting ahead of the bully and mentioning and predicting that he's going to be talking about his brother allowed MJF to, I think, deliver like a bit more of a well thought out and less predictable insult that ultimately did still talk about his brother, but did it in a, I think, a much more creative and interesting way. So these two had a great interaction. They have great chemistry together, and I think they'll be obviously the focal point of the entire gauntlet.
Yeah, they've certainly got a lot more out of this program with MJF than they did with him and Jeff Jarrett.
I would say so.
Still waiting on that one.
Yeah, No, MJF usually has pretty good chemistry with everybody, but that was a miss earlier.
Yeah, I think they did this in such a way I'd be curious if anyone came away with this, unless you just feel like Jay Briscoe should be completely off limits, which I do understand that thought process. But quite honestly, I feel like Jay Briscoe, of all people, would think this would be a great promo segment. Listen, there's plenty of people who would believe that, like, hey, it's for a wrestling angle. There are things like they just don't want to have associated.
I guess I'm only confused because the person to be most offended by that would be the willing partner in this scene, right? So if you're not getting clearance, like if Mark Briscoe is okay with it, why shouldn't the rest of us be?
Well, I mean, you can compare this when Charlotte and Paige did the deal and Reed was brought up in it. And there was just so much negativity toward that.
Because Rick didn't know.
Rick didn't know. And it was also just the case of, listen, like ultimately it's, like, if your audience is turned off by something, they're turned off by something. I mean, that's where it is. Like, but I wasn't in this segment.
But MJF, it wouldn't be an MJF segment if he didn't turn off. Or at least, like, reach the very border of turning somebody off. So I guess, like, that's why I'm not, I was okay with it, because I've come to expect this sort of thing from MJF.
You know, I think they did it in, like, a way that you were, like, I thought that the way that they brought it up, it was, it didn't feel like it was just, like, cheap for just shock's sake. Like, they are, like, it was for the service of this program that they are trying to build up, and did it in such a way where it was like it was Mark that was the target.
It was cheap heat, like, and Briscoe pointing it out beforehand basically, like, you know, told us that, hey, watch out for the MJF cheap heat, and MJF went there anyway. And it was like the type of heat where, like, it's almost there to kind of intentionally make you groan rather than, to me, actually offend. And the groan is, I think, what he's after, because he is a heel.
They got around it too when like MJF with Jeff Jarrett, and like he did bring up like Owen in the segment with Jarrett.
Brought up his alcoholism, like all the taboo subjects is kind of what you would expect, right? Briscoe is amazing, and
this is quite the buildup for like the first 2 minutes of a battle royal.
Well, I think that it'll end with these two. You know, like, you'll get some mystical interaction in there, but I think it'll start with these two, and I think it can only end with these two, because they are, like, this is actually essentially a singles match that they're kind of building up to.
Well, and there should be a bigger blow-off to this than Saturday, I think, between these two.
Yeah. I also wonder, okay, so we're going to do our predictions a little bit later, but, like, are we completely, most people are probably predicting an MJF win, but can we completely shut the door on Mark Briscoe winning this thing?
I wouldn't shut the door on that option. I think there's a few interesting options. Like, it's all in what you're building up toward. Like, are you, you're not necessarily, it's not like you're getting a pay-per-view title match out of this. You're getting a title match out of this. Like, and MJF and Briscoe going for the title against Hangman, against whoever. Yes.
I think MJF and Paige, yes, feels very natural heel babyface match, but Mark Briscoe versus Paige in a double babyface match also feels massive. And I think it could be a very successful storytelling. Like, in Mark Briscoe, I see a future world champion, and I certainly wouldn't have said that many years ago, but he showed me enough like depth and just charisma. He's got a sympathetic backstory, and he's a great wrestler, and he continues to just like get the crowd with every single one of these appearances. So what more do you need, you know? So
there are some similarities between this and like a Sami Zayn type of character, the one that is like not the obvious pick to be in that.
They're not conventionally attractive, I think is maybe what you're trying to say, or at least they don't look like a Ken doll.
Well, and they're also ones that I would not just do it, like, you wouldn't just, it's a long-term story that your audience are attached to these characters in such a way that if they ever were to win that big title, it would be such a big deal.
Yeah.
But if you were just a new fan, you probably wouldn't have, like, you need to know the history of these characters and be following them through all the times they've come up short through all these years, and they're not pegged to be top guys.
And Mark Briscoe is ascending to that level where, like, I mean, like a Mick Foley, you know, where, like, we love him enough, he's been around long enough, and he's been consistent enough and entertaining enough that I think everybody would be really happy to see a world title campaign and a world title run through him.
So the other half of this is Jet Speed attacking using the belts, and Shelton is run into the steps. They just dominate Lashley and Benjamin. MVP is knocked down, and then the Patriarchy come down. So it is now, and Kip Sabian's involved here. So it's like 5-on-3, if we're including MVP here, and they get a chair and they hit 3 concertos onto the knee of Bobby Lashley. This was so extreme that you almost got the thought they were taking Bobby Lashley out of this match. But I don't think that is the case.
No.
Benjamin was like staggering out of the corner and nearly was out of position for the tornado kick. And Bailey just like adjusted his hips and still hit this kick. And that was, and it ended with a UFO splash by Kevin Knight. But it was just total domination by the Patriarchy and Jet Speed. And now Bobby Lashley can sell in this match because he's got one leg going into it, and Benjamin as well selling the effects of this. So if they still come out with these belts, I mean, I don't know what this angle would have achieved, but least they're trying to give you some plausible reason that the two monsters of the division could somehow lose to two teams in a 4-on-2 scenario.
Yeah, this whole scenario is really bizarre. This entire build to this tag team title match has been really bizarre, okay? Like, like just even in this scenario, let's try to break this down, okay? I do feel like it's possible that maybe Tony has been listening to, like, all the online criticism of just how unbeatable the Hurt Syndicate have looked, and how, like, maybe...
Totally beatable. Jet Speed have been portrayed.
Yeah, there's that. And maybe, like, also, like, rumors that are out there about, like, questioning about whether or not, like, Hurt Syndicate are willing to job, which, like, I don't put much sort of, like, attention to, but maybe they are. Because it feels like maybe between Saturday and also today, like, they were trying to level the playing field. And they tried to level it a lot. But at the same time, it's incredibly weird because you've now, like, done such a 2-on-1 handicap angle for the heel team. So, like, going into the match, like, I almost feel a little bad for, like, Bobby Lashley here, you know, getting this, like, 4-on-1 beatdown. So I think the whole thing has been a bit of a mess, you know?
Yeah, I'm interested to see what the final product is on Saturday. It's this has not been the smoothest build-up, and of the main of all the matches on this show, like, I would, you know, Cole and Fletcher has not been, you know, anything like that's out of this world, but yeah, this tag title match has probably been the most flawed in terms of promotion. Megan Bain, Tekla, Queen Aminata, and Ty Mello, with Chris Statlander in the audience watching to find out who would be number 2. So, as Stephanie Vaquer has introduced the Devil's Kiss, I think all these women, they owe Velvet Sky some royalties. Queen Aminata has now introduced Chocolate Kisses, where she...
Oh, Chocolate Kisses is... Yeah. Well, it's... Naomi invented this, did she not? Is she not the innovator of this move?
I think Velvet was... The beautiful people were doing this spot, like, years and years ago. I'm sure it was done before them, but for anyone that are historians of wrapping legs around heads and posteriors for whatever offensive maneuvers, you can correct.
Are we talking about the move? Okay, so Vakir's move is like wrapping your leg around.
Vakir is like, yeah, knocking them, slamming, like, them into the mat. This is like just driving the ass right into the face. So less to imagine. Chocolate Kisses, which then gets turned around and Tekla starts doing it. Now hers is not Chocolate Kisses.
I'm sure we can come up with some interesting spider name for it.
All right, give me a week. Queen goes for a wheelbarrow on Tekla, and Ty goes to assist with a facebuster, totally mistimes it. Bane then launches Tekla off the shoulders to the others on the floor, and Bane just got a great reaction here for a lot of her big big person spots. Tekla goes for the spider walk, and then there's a spear to Mello. Queen stops the cover, and Ford gets involved, prompting Anna Jay to fight her off, and it's Bane clotheslining Queen Aminata and winning with a running powerbomb. So Statlander starts, and will be joined by Megan Bane in the women's gauntlet, and presumably all of these women we saw will all make it into the gauntlet.
Yeah. I thought this was great. I thought it was a great showcase of like the great talent that AEW has in its mid-card tech division. Its mid-card division at the moment. I thought all four did really well. Bane was booked to look the most impressive, obviously, with the win here. And they're hyping up the big showdown between Statlander and Bane, which I thought was a really great choice to use to build to this gauntlet match. But man, like, probably intentional, but like I got some major like babyface vibes from Megan Bane here.
I mean, she was treated like a babyface. All her stuff looked super cool and explosive in this match, and the whole match was built around her big spots.
Even playing to the crowd before doing the dive, like, so I mean, I would say like she's very ready to be turned into a, like, the cool dominant babyface. And I would say both her and Tekla, who are both technically the heels in this match, they both look so cool that I think they're both far more fitting as baby faces at the moment. Meanwhile, though, like, Queen Aminata, like, I think has received some really great benefit as a result of this, like, controversial Tekla match. It's, you know, like, she's getting a lot of mileage out of it. And it certainly attracted the level of negativity from online audiences that might have, like, thought she was being unprofessional or whatever. But I think they parlayed it really well into, like, an increased level of aggression from her in these online matches. And we'll talk about it in the segment afterwards, too. But I think she should turn heel. And I feel like that might actually be the direction, just coming off of the segment we'll be able to discuss.
They also mentioned the victims of the floods in Texas, which, of course, they're going to be here all week long. Horrific story if you've been following that news.
Awful.
Renee is with Tekla in the back, and Queen Aminata jumps her. They have a pull apart, and basically this was stated that all of you are going to be in the gauntlet. And so we go from this right into Mark Briscoe coming in and cutting the ultimate Mark Briscoe wild, insane man promo. Like, most of this was totally, like, I wish I put my closed captions on to see what was being typed here, because it was probably just like a child hitting and mashing the keyboard. This was great. Renee was just totally broke by the end of this. Like, she just thought it was the greatest thing ever.
There's nobody else on this roster. Like, I don't even know if there's anybody in wrestling other than, like, I don't know, like,
Delirious,
exactly, that I think could get away with, like, this sort of promo. And just, like, he made it look so effortless, and it's just, like, he's just being himself, and he's just being fun, and he's just very magnetic to watch. So, yeah, I do hope Tony has, like, big plans for him.
It's G1 Climax season, and that means the Post Wrestling Cafe has you covered with podcasts covering every single tournament match. Plus, we've got Rewind Away going back to 2005 to review Vengeance, featuring Triple H versus Batista in a Hell in a Cell match. John and Way are going to be reviewing F1 the Movie, starring Brad Pitt. And of course, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, ad-free with the news of the week and your feedback. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com.
Samoa Joe and Wheeler Yuta, fans were chanting for Wheeler to get a haircut. And they pointed out the hypocrisy here when they mock Ricochet for being bald and this guy for having too much hair.
Happy medium, I guess.
Joe was having the time of his life here. He did the walk-off spot. Then he did a playoff of it where he was, like, blinded on the floor and did, like, what was presented as, like, a shoot walk-off where he unintentionally moved out of the way of a pescado, and then he looks up at the skies and just into the lights. This guy is just, he's very underappreciated for some of the comedy he works in for this. But then they settled in here. Joe went for the bionic elbow, but then kicked them low to, they clarified, the inside of the thigh. It was a clean kick. Yuta got in some offense. Joe kicked out at one, got out of a Kimura, and Yuta goes for the German and bites Joe's ear to set up an O'Connor roll, which is countered right into the coquina clutch, and it's Yuta tapping out. Gabe Kidd runs in, jumping Joe as Hobbs and Shibata race down. And this was frequently throughout the night where we'd have run-ins that would bleed into the next match or the next segment, and this continued here. Did they flat out state that Gabe Kidd is in this trios title match? Because everyone's takeaway.
So as of, like, this recording, I don't believe they've actually officially announced the match yet.
I'll probably make that clear on Thursday, but I think this is probably our trio.
Yeah, yeah. And he'll be facing Katsuyori Shibata, which is very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it makes a whole lot of sense. I didn't even think about it in the lead. Like, everyone assumed Kidd would be, unless Pac had some miraculous return. But you have the natural story here with Kidd and Shibata for that match, which I would hope they at least, like, maybe give some attention to tomorrow night for people that wouldn't know that.
I don't think this is getting the video.
Is this not going to be on the countdown show?
No. Maybe they should play California Dream and the 5-part New Japan documentary series that you and I reviewed that long ago.
Imagine Gabe Kidd's go home promo tomorrow night is all about Chonka and Shibata's high standards.
Chonko, yeah.
Chonko.
Shibata criticized my Chonko too much. Now I join the Death Riders to get my revenge. Oh, man.
And I still won't eat that shit in catering in the middle of buttfuck nowhere.
Well, they haven't exactly explained that, but
not yet.
Yeah. Well,
maybe he'll be joined by his favorite color commentator.
We keep kidding about that, but
Gabe Kidd's personal commentator.
Yeah. I think Joe has, like, it's almost like Joe has successfully turned that walkaway spot into his entire character. Or, like, the vibe you just get from Joe at this stage in his career is just, like, I'm too cool to work hard, but I'm still going to, like, beat the shit out of you anyway.
He's like work rate Carlito. That's who Samoa Joe is.
Oh, work rate Carlito, yeah. Okay. He's like Kevin Nash, except, like, 100 times more athletic.
I've never compared Joe to Kevin Nash before, but
yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a birthday today. Happy birthday, Kevin Nash.
All right, yeah. All right, cool.
We only got two matches announced for Collision, the 8-man that we mentioned, FTR, Christian, and Nick Wayne against the Outrunners and Jet Speed, and Mystico versus the Beast Mortos. So Mortos was supposed to do StarCast, but he's been pulled from StarCast because he's back to Arena Mexico for the third week in a row as he's taking on Esfinge on Friday night. So he's going to be in Texas on Thursday, Arena Mexico on Friday, and who knows, maybe he'll be back for the Gauntlet on Saturday.
I would expect it, yeah, if you're talking about
Texas, like, to Mexico, that's not too difficult. So he could be back on Saturday. But you're getting like this is great to be seeing this in a one-on-one match. Like, here is someone that was just so never going to have anything to do with CMLL, and now we're getting this match on U.S. cable television on Thursday night.
Yeah, yeah. No,
and I'm hoping that Mystico, I mean, it's Collision. It's not going to be a big crowd, but we'll see what kind of a reception he gets.
Yeah, if it's anything like it was Saturday, he'll come out to Meimero, but, like, I don't know how much of the audience will know the words. Maybe in Texas it'll be different. Let's see.
And then the main event is the All-Star 8-Man Tag, Jon Moxley, Claudio, Young Bucks against Hangman, Will Ospreay, Powerhouse Hobbs, and Shibata. Hangman, no fear in the world about the biggest match of his life, throwing out the Orihara moonsault to set up a commercial break in front of 2,500 people 4 days out.
Well, he's a risk taker, I guess.
That he is. Table is set up at ringside, so someone was going to go through it. They had the heat on Ospreay for a long period, eventually making the tag to Hangman, who came in. Great comeback here from Hangman, going after everybody. Hobbs and Claudio came in. They did their power spots together. Shibata gets super kicked by Nick, and then the Bucks are hitting double super kicks to Page, then to Ospreay, and then to Hobbs, and they hit multiple super kicks to Hobbs off the apron. He won't go down. Finally, he's caught by Moxley and Claudio, and Hobbs is put through the table. EVP trigger onto Shibata, which after Saturday could be just the trigger. Maybe it'll become what?
It should be the
trigger warning. That'll be what it's called.
Oh, goodness. Well, it used to be a BTE trigger, but that doesn't exist anymore.
That's gone too. They gotta create something new. Maybe it'll be the founding trigger. I don't know. So Shibata goes down from an EVP trigger, a neutralizer, and then succumbs to the bulldog choke from Jon Moxley to end the match, but does not end the night because we have plenty to come. I thought, like, fine tag match. Like, it was, you know, the crowd got into it. There were enough of a preview of the various interactions coming up, but more to come here. Kidd and Yuta run down. Shafir passes a chain to Moxley, and they're using it on Hangman. Ospreay's being held down. The crowd chants for Swerve, and they pull out the dreaded plastic bags. They're going to suffocate their main event for Saturday. And They're stopped when Swerve appears on screen and he's gotten his construction license. This guy's leading the constructors standings after tonight. He says that he has to choose between peace and vengeance, but for him, they're one and the same. Everything that we've been through, he says to the Young Bucks, is about control, and I'm about to take it back. And then we zoom out, and he's in a construction loader. And
this is an excavator, John. Okay,
this is an excavator.
Okay. Yeah, are you not familiar with Blippi? Okay. Have you not learned enough about every construction vehicle from your son, you know, growing up?
I mixed them up. Do these not go by is loader? Am I incorrect?
I don't know if they're like there's a genre, but like I think a loader is a completely different thing where the scoop goes up.
Okay. Well,
not in.
Well, he didn't scoop anything. He just dropped this 1,000-pound metal on top of the Bucks limo. The Bucks freak out in the ring and head outside to do what? I have no idea. Like, were they going to save their limo? The babyfaces fight back in the ring. Ospreay hits a moonsault. Page levels Moxley with a discus lariat and then goes for the buckshot, but it's Claudio saving with the uppercut, and he nails Claudio. There's a stare down, and then Moxley and Shafir take off. All the babyfaces stand tall in the ring, and we go to the Young Bucks. Nick has the line, "How will we financially recover from this?" Now, the one thing is that when they introduced this limo last week in Ontario, California, did they not state that they put this on like Tony's card, that the company is paying for this thing?
Yeah.
What are they out here? It's the same limo from last week that in theory they have taken this limo. I would want to know how much gas they needed to take this thing from Ontario, California to Garland, Texas.
Yeah. So did he just cost Tony Khan all that money?
Yeah, like Tony should have been like, how will I financially recover from this? So that was my my nitpick here. But Swerve comes off of a forklift with a swerve stomp. And then he says, "I found the fathers." And Swerve comes out into the arena. And that ends the show.
Oh, man.
I don't know. Not the greatest.
Not for you. Are you kidding me? Yeah. You serious?
Yeah, it was
you didn't love this car shit. You didn't love like a fucking limo being flipped over by an excavator and then a man doing a wrestling move off of a forklift.
I will, you know, if this limo had been some prized possession of theirs, like we literally introduced this limo a week ago. I couldn't buy the emotional attachment to this limo that I don't think is even on their credit card.
I mean, that might be a gap in logic, the whole like, you know, Tony's credit card thing. But you're supposed to feel for it because it is a possession of the bad guys and it's going to cost them a lot of money. Not to mention just like it's really cool to see like cars being flipped over and such. If this was actually sort of like working the excavator, I was actually quite impressed. He was like, looked like he had done this before, at least practiced really well. I enjoyed this as a go home segment because it felt like 1999 Raw. Like it felt big, you know, it felt like it was a big budget production. Okay. You paid for a limo and you paid for an excavator and you paid for a forklift. And, it just made Swerve look so cool, you know, and the way they wrapped everything up too, like while doing this sort of thing outside, but being ultra serious in the ring between Mox and Paige with the chain, just kind of referencing the death match and everything, I thought was really, really strong and just got me hyped, you know, as a go home segment.
I like the whole like the baby faces coming together at the end of this, and I think people are super hyped on Moxley and Hangman in particular. It feels like a really big main event that they have promoted for Saturday. So I thought that was the strength of this. But that concluded half of our go home week for All In Texas. We will see what Collision follows with, but this was the more direct last minute pitch to buy the pay per view.
Yeah, I'd say so. I thought it was a strong go-home show. You know, it gave you, like, good sort of, like, a representation from all of the major matches on the card. And in the cases of the big matches, I thought they made them feel bigger. So I thought it was a strong go-home show.
Always bigger in Texas. That's what they made everything feel. And you're getting Machine Head. I mean, what more could you ask for? Machine Head in Texas.
When is Bush actually going to play live at one of these shows?
They've got room. There's plenty of room at Globe Life Field. They can, you know, you can fit 25,000 and still have a stage.
Is that a musical performance you would welcome?
Bush?
For a wrestling event?
I don't know if there's any live musical performance I'm dying to see.
They need to come to Canada for All Out and perform as Bush X.
Yes, that would be the key. Okay, the real ones, they're listening to Razorblade Suitcase. That's, you know, the follow-up.
Yeah.
Maybe next year Tony goes like Glycerine. Maybe he goes for some contemporary, contemporary, but shuffles the CD.
Maybe not. His taste in music is really interesting, Tony, you know, like his musical choices of what he chooses to buy and pay for is really interesting.
It's like
it's unpredictable.
Mid to late 90s alternative rock, lots of screaming, and that's like it's a very distinct taste.
And I'm so excited. And
he does
John.
Mix it up. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting eclectic musical taste. All right. The show continues on at the Post Wrestling Cafe. We're going to preview All In Texas, and we will take some feedback to the Go Home edition of Dynamite. If you're not joining us on the cafe, we hope you will on Saturday. We will be live as soon as All In Texas ends, when everyone is furious that Jon Moxley is going to hold this belt for another year. Come on over to youtube.com/postwrestling and get all of our rundown of All In Texas. We will be going live moments after the pay-per-view. So live on Saturday, live on Sunday here on the YouTube channel. Hit subscribe or be a real one and head on over to postwrestlingcafe.com and help send Oscar to racing school.
Racing school? What do you mean?
I don't know. Does he want to be a race car driver?
No, he likes to line his cars up in a row. So is there a job for that?
Yes. Could be a valet.
I hope he's a bit more ambitious than that, but all right.
Nothing wrong with that. Okay. He, like Mark Briscoe, he likes to work hard. Okay. He's proud of it.
True.
On to the cafe we go.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.